RadioInfluence.com.
This is Beyond the Badge on Radio Influence. A look inside the biggest and most controversial news stories you need to know now. One of the country's most relied upon law enforcement analysts, Vincent Hill.
Good evening and welcome to Beyond the Badge. I'm your host, Vincent Hill, coming to you, of course, from Atlanta, GA, as we do each and every Tuesday, 8 p.m. Eastern, exclusively on RadioInfluence.com and available for immediate download on iTunes. I can't believe it's already Tuesday. It has been a very fast week. Seems like I was just talking to you yesterday about some of the cases that happened in the white community, and I compared those to cases in the black community where all the protests have occurred, the Black Lives Matter movement and civil rights activists and attorneys. You know, I just looked at a lot of cases that happened in the white community that a lot of people hadn't heard of. And I got to tell you, the feedback on that show was awesome. I greatly appreciate the feedback. There were a lot of people that reached out to me and some that I actually saw in passing that said, hey, that was a great show. We had no idea about these other cases like the Dylan Taylors and the Zachary Hammonds and the Kelly Thomases. And they appreciated that I actually looked at those cases unbiased, without race, and just talked about how the same cases that everyone's protesting in the black community, the same type of stuff's going on in the white community. And during that show, I said, maybe it's not this whole misconception, this theory, this conspiracy theory that white officers just have it out to kill black unarmed youth or black suspects or whatever. Maybe it's how policing is done in this country, and maybe it's that someone's actions may have led to their police contact that caused their unfortunate death. But I thank everyone that reached out to me, whether it was via Twitter, in person, via email, and shared your thoughts, your appreciation for that show. I appreciate your appreciation. And tonight's show, I want to focus on something that's kind of near and dear to me, and it goes back to policing and how police operate and some of the things police perceive during their job. A few days ago last week, I covered a story with CBS 46 here in Atlanta about a pursuit where police were chasing a stolen vehicle. The suspect fled, of course, at a high rate of speed. He ended up hitting a car, which ended up killing a grandmother and her two grandchildren. The sad part of that story is the granddaughter was actually ejected from the vehicle, and police didn't find her until hours later, I believe 10 or 11 hours later, when the family was finally notified, and they were told there were two deaths, and actually the mother of the daughter said no, my daughter should have been in the car. And the police went back to the scene. They searched in about maybe 25, 30 yards from where the accident happened. The little girl was behind some bushes in someone's front yard. So, you know, it was tragic. And there was a lot of back and forth. I did the story on CBS 46. The next day, another law enforcement analyst did the story on CBS 46. And we kind of differed with our opinion on how officers could have missed a little girl. And my take on it was that officers, when they're in a pursuit, they get trapped in what's tunnel vision, what's known as tunnel vision. And the tunnel vision means that, hey, you only see what you're chasing. You only see the bad guy that's running from you. So, yes, police are trained in pursuit techniques and trained to stop at intersections and take certain safety precautions to make sure the public is not in danger. But at the same time, when your adrenaline is going 200 miles an hour and you're chasing someone, and in your mind you're trying to figure out, okay, why is this person running? Okay, in this case it was a stolen car. But did that person in the stolen car have a gun? Did that person in the stolen car have warrants? Did that person in the stolen car have just committed a murder? So, as an officer in a pursuit, your focus, your vision, your tunnel vision is on catching that suspect. And unfortunately, sometimes that goes to putting the public in danger, and it goes to putting the officer in danger as well. So my take on it was, when the crash happened, the suspect fled. And at that point, the officers did what they were supposed to do, protect and serve. So they did not chase on foot after the suspect in the stolen vehicle. Their main focus were the people inside that vehicle at the accident scene. Now, here's where myself and the other analysts disagreed on this case. His theory is they should have searched the area for the little girl. Here's where I disagree. When you're investigating an accident, and I've investigated quite a few in my time, especially one where there was just a crash, you have injured bodies on the scene, your focus is the accident scene itself. You're not going to go looking 70 yards, 80 yards, looking in people's yards, looking in their bushes, because you think there may be a body inside. Now, the family has said, well, there was a car seat, so they should have known she was in there. Well, not necessarily, because how many people drive around with car seats when they don't have a child in the car? People usually don't take car seats out of their vehicle. So it's not uncommon for an officer to see a car seat without a person in there, without a small child in the car seat. So I can clearly see how these officers could have missed the little girl being at the scene, because their focus was on the two victims that they knew they had on hand. Their focus was to getting them medical attention. Obviously, their focus wasn't even on chasing the bad guy. Their focus was on saving those victims. But that goes back to what I was saying about tunnel vision and pursuits. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying every officer that gets in a pursuit gets locked in this tunnel vision and that's the only thing they see. But before I covered that story, a few days before, in a surrounding county here in Atlanta, an older couple was killed by someone fleeing from police. The suspect ran a red light, ran into the couple, and he killed them. Was it the officer's fault? Likely not. The weekend of the Super Bowl in San Francisco, three people that were fleeing from police in a vehicle crashed into a taxi. Their vehicle caught on fire and they were killed. Now, that officer actually terminated the pursuit, which basically means he stopped the pursuit, because he knew in his mind the threat to the public was too high for him to continue to chase. So officers look at pursuits on a case-by-case basis, because every pursuit is not going to be the same. For instance, the pursuit here in Georgia where the grandmother was killed, it was at 9 o'clock on a Sunday morning, when usually the traffic here in Atlanta and surrounding areas is a lot lighter than it would be, say, on a Monday evening at 5 o'clock when it's bumper-to-bumper traffic. The conditions probably actually allowed for what was perceived as a safe chase, but officers cannot take into account that the suspect may run into someone or that someone may be walking across the street. They can't take that into account. The officer in San Francisco, however, said, it's Super Bowl weekend. There's a million people in this city for the Super Bowl. If I chase this vehicle right now, I could be putting the public at danger. I'm going to terminate this pursuit. Now, I can honestly say I've lost count of how many pursuits I was involved in when I was in patrol. But I can tell you how many I've terminated myself. Three. Each one of those was because of a stolen car. And each one of those was, if I continue to chase at this exact moment, someone could potentially get hurt or killed. Now, there's three people or three scenarios I have to look at when making that decision. I have to preserve my life as the officer because, remember, an officer's main goal at the end of his shift is to go home to his family. So I have to take that into consideration. I have to take the public into consideration. And not only that, although this person is fleeing from you, you have to take into the person that is fleeing, you have to take into account their safety and their well-being. Because although this person is fleeing, let's say they crash and they get killed or seriously hurt. You don't think that's going to affect an officer's mindset? If you don't believe me, go ask the officer in San Francisco from this past weekend. Three people died. Their car caught on fire and they were burned alive. You don't think that officer is going to look back and say, wow, did I really need to chase this person? Now, keep in mind, he actually terminated the pursuit, but it was the initiation of the pursuit that led to the accident. So you have to look at each situation differently. I'll give you one example that I remember to this day. I was in Nashville, of course, that's where I was. I was at a McDonald's. I was talking to my father-in-law, Lou Toth, who I've mentioned before, who was on the job at the time. There was a car at the drive-thru, and the people in the car kept giving me the deer in the headlight look. So as I get behind the car to run the tag, now keep in mind, the car was just stolen like 20 minutes before this. They take off. Immediately get on the interstate, I-24, westbound in Nashville, going down past Titan Stadium. I think it's called Nissan Stadium now. We're hauling butt. He's running people off the road left and right. I look down at my speedometer in my Crown Victoria, and it was past the 140 mark. So I can't even tell you how fast I was going. And it hit me, and I was calling the pursuit out as we required, as any department is, calling it out over the radio, direction of travel, how many times the vehicle's occupied, speeds, all of that good stuff. And it hit me, Vince, this isn't even worth it. Because two things are going to happen. They're either going to wreck into someone or call someone to wreck, or you're going to kill yourself. I was going over 140 miles an hour down Interstate 24. And I said, it's not worth it. So I terminated the pursuit. And there were a few officers that were en route to me that were upset that I terminated it. But my thinking was, it's not worth my life, the public's life, or even this Yahoo that's running from me. It's not worth his life. We will catch him at a later date. Surely, as I had called it, we caught him the next day because they weren't even smart enough to dump the vehicle. I guess they figured because we got away once, we'll get away twice. They weren't even smart enough to dump the vehicle, so we caught them. But think about this. Had I continued that pursuit at over 140 miles an hour, had I crashed into anything, that would have been a wrap. I would not be here today to talk to you about pursuits. Had that suspect crashed into anything. Now, if I'm doing 140, that means he's doing about 150 himself because he's ahead of me in this pursuit. That would have been his life and the lives of his three passengers. Or had he hit an innocent bystander, that would have been their life. And I would have had to, for the rest of my life, live with the fact that because I chased this person and didn't get out of the tunnel vision that we get caught in, that someone lost their life. And it's not worth it. It wasn't worth it then. It will never be worth it because I couldn't have lived with myself had that happened. Now, a lot of people watch pursuits on TV and, you know, they see news footage of LAPD police chases or police chases in other cities, and a lot of people, oh, wow, that's the coolest thing. Or they'll see it in the movies and think, wow, that is the coolest thing. Look how precise they are. Look at this. And yeah, it looks cool when you're watching it, but it's not cool when you're doing it because your stress level goes up. Your hands start to shake. You get that tunnel vision. it becomes harder and harder the longer the pursuit goes for you to realize, oh, I'm coming to an intersection. I need to slow down, watch for cross traffic, and keep going. Because just because I have my siren blaring and my blue lights flashing doesn't necessarily mean the people around me are going to stop for me. So I have to make sure that I'm following traffic laws while I'm pursuing. But the man in me, the officer in me, is telling me, get the bad guy, get the bad guy. Picture it like this, a dog chasing a cat. A dog will chase a cat into the middle of the street at 100 miles an hour without thinking about cars coming or going. How many times have you seen dogs get hit in the middle of the street because they're chasing someone? That dog has that tunnel vision. I got to get the cat. And that's what happens in police. I got to get this bad guy. So if you're not careful as an officer, and this is, believe me, easier said than done. If you're not careful, and I don't fault any officer that has caused a wreck during a pursuit. Could some policies be changed? Absolutely. But as a guy who has been in those pursuits and knows exactly what goes on in your mind, I can see how tragedies like this could happen. It's quite simple. And let's look at it from another angle that a lot of people don't see because they only see the cool stuff on TV and the officer pitted the car and it looks great and the suspect was put in custody and everyone went home and they high-fived each other. Well, let's look at it from another angle that's very dangerous to police when they get caught in this tunnel vision. When the pursuit comes to that point of termination, that point of stop where you got that vehicle stopped, it's hard to refrain from just running up to the car and yanking people out of the window because it looks great. I know someone's going to say it looks great, but sometimes that's the officer's first reaction. Run up to the car, especially if they're by themselves in a pursuit. I'm going to run up to the car. I'm going to get this person out. I'm going to put him in handcuffs. If that officer doesn't slow down, that officer is making himself a target. I can't tell you how many officers have been killed because at the end of a pursuit, they ran up to a vehicle and that bad guy was just lying in wait to pull that trigger, lying in wait. Because he knew the officer was going to run up to the vehicle and try to get them out of the vehicle, and that's when they've been killed. So, it's important, and I'm not talking to officers because they know this, it's important when officers end a pursuit, when it's at that stopping point, that they wait for backup if backup's not there, that they give verbal commands from a distance behind cover, usually their car door, or even behind the vehicle. Because if they don't, they're putting themselves at risk of being hurt or killed. Pursuits are the most stressful situation an officer can be in. And I know someone's going to say, oh, well, it's probably pulling the gun on someone is most stressful. Well, police, 90% of their job, their career, don't have to pull their gun on people. But a pursuit could happen at any second. Remember, I've said there's no such thing as a routine traffic stop. So, you go to pull someone over for a busted taillight, they may take off on you. It's happened to me. You go up to the vehicle, ask for someone's driver's license. They claim, oh, I don't have it, my name is such and such. So you walk back to your car, and as you're walking back, you hear tires pull out. So, you're in this pursuit. Again, you don't know why this person is chasing you. You just know they're running from the police. And let's be honest. Let's call it what it is. No one just runs from the police just because they want to make the 5 o'clock news. When they're running from police, they have something to hide. So, the law says officers can pursue. Now, each department has their own policies and procedures which governs pursuits. in Nashville, when a certain police chief took over who was no longer there, the pursuit policy became very stringent. Now, there were a lot of people that were upset with it, but when you look at it from the totality of things, it actually reduced accidents, it reduced complaints, it reduced the chance that someone could get hurt or killed in a pursuit. And it actually worked. There were certain things you couldn't do during a pursuit. There were certain things you could. If it went too long, they were going to, what we called in Nashville, signal 9. Terminate the pursuit. It was going to happen. But at the end of the day, it reduced complaints. It kept the public more safe. But don't get it confused. Those short pursuits that last 1, 2, 3 minutes could be the most dangerous and the most deadly. Because everything happens so quick. You don't have time to react to a lot of stuff. The pursuit comes to an end. And if you're in that tunnel vision, you could get hurt. Because the person that's fleeing is already thinking 20 steps ahead. They're already planning their escape route. So, if you're not careful in those 2 or 3 minutes, if you get locked in to that tunnel vision that you can't get out of, an officer can get hurt. The public can get hurt. Now, statistics say, especially here in Georgia, that most of the police pursuits are the result of nonviolent offenses, i.e. traffic violations. And that's what causes most pursuits. And, yeah, I'm not a stats guy. I can just tell you what I've read somewhere where someone who does this for a living came up with this. But I can tell you, yeah, a lot of my pursuits started as traffic violations, which is quote unquote a nonviolent offense. Now, luckily, when I was chasing people, no one was ever hurt. Thankfully, no one was ever killed. But let's look at those nonviolent offenses, the traffic violations, and what they led to. I've recovered guns, stolen guns, murder suspects, rape suspects, drugs, weapons, you name it, all of this from a quote-unquote nonviolent offense or traffic violation. So, that goes back to what I said. Police, when we're chasing someone, we want to know exactly why they're running from us. Just because it may have started as a busted headlight or a broken tail light doesn't necessarily mean that's what you're going to find when you catch this person. Or let's look at it from another angle. Let's say this person did just kill someone. You had an opportunity to pull them over. You didn't. They got away. They killed someone else. So then the public is going to say, well, why didn't the police do their job? So police are entitled. They're authorized to give chase to someone that flees. So the minute it starts as a nonviolent traffic offense, when you flee in a vehicle, it becomes a felony. So now you've committed a felony offense by fleeing from the officer. So the officer is going to give chase. The pursuit is going to initiate, and then the public, the officer, and the knucklehead that's fleeing are all going to be put in danger. But police pursuits aren't going anywhere because it's the nature of the job. People run from the police. Police chase to get bad guys off the street. So a lot of people ask, what justifies a pursuit? Well, let's look at the couple that I mentioned earlier that was killed here in Gwinnett County, Georgia. 77-year-old man and his wife, who was 78, were killed when a father and son decided to flee from police around 10:30 when the police attempted to stop them for DUI. Now, the thing with DUI drivers, if they're left on the road, and they're intoxicated and they're driving erratic, chances are they're going to hit someone. And we all know how DUIs go. It's never the drunk driver that's hurt, because these two hit this couple at a very high rate of speed and they weren't even injured because they were so intoxicated. But they killed the couple. So, were the officers justified in chasing them? Yes, absolutely. Is it tragic what happened that the couple died? Absolutely. But here's why they chased. Because the father and the son were intoxicated. One of them was driving behind the wheel. They were obviously driving erratic, which is why the officers tried to approach. So, to protect and serve the public, officers attempted to pull the vehicle over. They fled. Now let's go back to something else I said. No pursuit is the same. You have to look at all circumstances. This pursuit was later at night. Not a lot of cars on the road at that time. You have this drunk driver. So the officers, in their mind, they justified the pursuit. A, because they had the drunk driver. B, because the traffic conditions were not like they would have been at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So they chased this person. This person eluded police for several miles, hit this couple, and killed them around 10:30 at night. So just think about this. How many cars really are on the road? And this wasn't an interstate. These were just regular roads in the city of Johns Creek, Georgia. So truthfully, there's not a lot of cars on the road at that time. So this is why our officers thought they were justified in chasing, because they didn't see an immediate threat, danger, that their pursuit would have caused any other driver on the road. I assure you, however, had that pursuit been on a Monday, 5 o'clock, a lot of cars, a lot of traffic, A, it probably likely would not have started, or B, it would have stopped just as fast as it started, which means that pursuit would have been over in about 30 seconds or less, because if the officer hadn't called it off, I can assure you his supervisor, who he just relayed this information to over the radio and to dispatch, I assure you they would have terminated the pursuit, because they, and this is someone that is not in the pursuit, who is not likely to get trapped in that tunnel vision because they're listening to the pursuit, they would have terminated the pursuit just based on the safety of the public. So it goes back to look at your conditions. Look at your surroundings. Am I putting the public at danger if I chase right now? Are there a lot of vehicles on the road? These are all things officers have to think about before they initiate this pursuit. Now let's look at some factors that happen during a pursuit that a lot of people don't realize are going on that could lead to deadly accidents or just accidents in general. And I'm going to start with the simple one that a lot of people don't even think about. Now, the pursuit that killed the grandmother and the two small children here in Atlanta. 9 o'clock in the morning. It's broad daylight. Now, just think about this for a minute. When you're on the interstate and it's 10 at night, you can see a police car from, if they have their blue lights on, you can see that police car probably for a mile or two, because it's dark and you see these rotating blue lights. Now those blue lights are a lot harder to see in the daytime, and a lot of people don't even see them in the daytime. Even though they're rotating and flashing, they don't see them. So they might not even know that the police officer's moving at a high rate of speed or that they're chasing someone, because they can't see the lights. It's a true fact. I'm not making this up. It's a true fact. I've been in that situation. I've been the officer who switched from working nights to days and had my blue lights on after a traffic stop and not realized it, because at nighttime, I can see the reflection of those lights in the darkness. But in daytime, I can't see them, so I don't even know they're on. And I've had people just moving out of my way, getting over to the right. I'm like, what are they doing? Oh, my lights are on. It happens. It happens to police. It happens to citizens. Now, here's another thing that you may not realize, but it's true. It's a proven fact. If an officer is going 50 miles per hour or over, someone, an individual, a citizen, will not actually hear the siren until the officer has already passed them. They don't hear it from behind. They hear it as they pass. So just think of it as a fighter jet. And you're at a stadium and all of a sudden you hear this, but the jet's already passed you. It's the same thing with that siren. The decibels you don't hear until they've already passed. So again, average Joe citizen driving down the street doesn't realize that this officer is about to shoot past them. They can't see the lights because it's daytime. They can't hear the siren yet because it hasn't passed. And wham, right at the intersection, there's a T-bone. It happens. It's physics. Now, from the officer's side, here's some things that the officers have to watch out for. Following distance. Because it's human nature. When someone runs from you, you want to be right up on them and be able to grab them. But in a police pursuit, that can be dangerous. So the further distance you have, the less likely you are to A, make those mistakes where you have a collision. Because if you just stay back a distance as an officer, 4 to 6 feet, that gives you plenty of reaction time in case the suspect wants to use their car as a weapon, bait you into a collision, or anything. So the further distance you have, it helps reduce the tunnel vision because it gives you that boundary, that reaction time to keep yourself safe, to keep the public safe. When an officer is in a pursuit, a lot of people don't realize and understand, nor have they ever had this happen to them, that their adrenaline level is on overload. And when this happens, and anybody it's happened to will tell you, when your adrenaline goes from 0 to 300 in less than a second, you start to lose fine motor skills. Your breathing is elevated. You may experience blurry vision. You may experience deafness. Not deaf as in the sense that you can't hear, but deafness is in the sense that all you're focused on is this object. And you can't hear somebody screaming in your ear, or you can't hear the kids playing in the street because your adrenaline has just shot through the roof. So just imagine getting 40 cups of coffee and shooting it up like you would shoot up heroin, and that instant fix. And that's what it is. And it's really bad for younger, inexperienced officers, like the officers right out of the academy. Like, I've been in a lot of pursuits in my day. It was just the nature of the beast in East Nashville that someone was going to run from me. But I can tell you, those first few pursuits, it's by the grace of God that I'm still here. Because I was that victim of that adrenaline that's through the roof. I was that victim of following that car too close. I was that victim of, after the pursuit has stopped, I'm running up to the car to yank someone out the window, not realizing I should stay back from a safe distance and wait for backup. And yeah, keep in mind, we trained on this at the academy. Yeah, we did all this cool stuff. We drove around cones and we simulated chasing people and how to react on a felony stop. But I'm going to tell you, that goes out the window when you are in your first live actual pursuit. So if an officer's not careful and they can't control that adrenaline and they can't control their safe distance and they can't control not running up on the vehicle, it's dangerous. It's dangerous for everyone. So for those that think it looks cool, yeah, it looks really cool. Like in Bad Boys 2, where they were chasing the truck across the bridge and they were throwing these cars off the truck and police were still pursuing and they were weaving in and out and not hitting anything. Only in the movies. That's only in the movies. and Martin Lawrence and Will Smith were making jokes as they were driving and talking back and forth. It's only in the movies. Because I assure you, if that was real, Martin and Will Smith, they wouldn't have been able to talk, let alone make jokes or criticize each other while they're in the car. It doesn't happen. You lose those fine motor skills. I can't tell you how many times I've keyed up on the radio in a pursuit and my voice is cracking because I'm losing that fine motor skill of just talking into the radio, which police do all the time. But your voice starts to crack because your adrenaline is so high that you can't control the crack in your voice. You can't control the heavy breathing that is being heard to the dispatcher, who is now on high alert because you've just keyed up, breathing heavily, and your voice is cracking because your adrenaline, your stress, is through the roof. If you get a chance, go look up Kevin Bailey in Ohio. He was killed by police after a pursuit which lasted maybe 35, 40 seconds, because truthfully, the average pursuit is 3 minutes or less before it terminates. Those long ones are just one-offs, but your average pursuit, 3 minutes at the most before it terminates. But anyway, they pulled him over for a traffic stop. This was in Solon, Ohio. S-O-L-O-N, Solon, Ohio. They pulled him over for a traffic stop. It was back in 2013. There's obviously an odor of marijuana coming through the vehicle. The officers go back to the car and, you know, try to convince him to step out of the vehicle. He rolls his window up. The officer says, "Hey, why are you rolling the window up? You're not going anywhere." And boom, he takes off. So right before this, he texts his mother. This guy, Kevin Bailey, texts his mother, "I love you. I'm going to die. I'm not going back to jail." Leaves these officers on a pursuit. They follow him and pull up right on his car. I mean, it was barely enough room for him to open the door. But he opens the door, he starts firing on police. Of course, they shoot and kill him. Now, part of that tunnel vision that I talked about was that they pulled up so close. And if you get a chance, just look up the video. It's on YouTube. You can't miss it. They pull up within inches of his door. He gets out and he starts firing. Of course, they shoot back. But just that, in that instance, that traffic stop could have gone an entirely different way. Those officers could have been killed because they didn't keep that distance I talked about, the 4 to 6 seconds. Now, I'm not condemning these officers. I'm not judging these officers because I've been that officer. I just want people to understand the dangers of pursuits and how they become dangerous. Not dangerous because there's a car and it's going fast, and that's what cars are made to do. It becomes dangerous when our logical, our rational minds get pushed to the back and our irrational minds, that adrenaline rush, that loss of motor skills, that loss of judgment comes to the forefront. That's when pursuits become dangerous. So, to all my brothers and sisters out there in blue, I urge you, I want you to make sure you don't become a victim of that tunnel vision when you're in these pursuits. Make sure you can control that adrenaline. And I know it's easier said than done. I get it. Like I said, I've been there. But at the end of the day, your job is to go home, is to protect, is to serve. We can't do that if we get killed because some knucklehead decided to text his mom right before he got in a shootout with police that he was going to die. We can't help that. We can't help the fact that there's going to be a grandmother going to church, taking her kids to church, and this knucklehead that just stole a car is going to run into them and kill them and throw the girl out the window out of the car, and she's not found for hours later. We can't control that. We can't control the father and the son who decided to get drunk and flee from police and hit this old retired couple and kill them instantly. We can't control that. But what we can control is when to chase and when not to chase. What's worth chasing and what's not worth chasing. What our road conditions tell us we can do and what they tell us we can't do. Now again, I'm not condemning anybody. But I can tell you I've terminated 3 pursuits. And those 3 pursuits that I terminated, and like I said, I can't remember how many pursuits I'd been in my days of policing. But those 3 that I terminated, I can assure you I terminated because I knew in my mind, my body, and my soul, had I continued chasing, either I would have died, somebody else would have died. So I used that judgment. I was able to control that adrenaline, get out of that tunnel vision, and make the best decision. And that's what all officers need to be able to do. Make that decision, decide what's worth it, what's not worth it, and keep yourself safe, keep the public safe. With that said, that leads me into tonight's officer down moment. And I think it's only fitting because we've been talking about pursuits this entire episode and the dangers of those and the tunnel vision. And I mentioned how a young officer who's inexperienced could get caught in that. And for this officer down, I want to honor Janrette, Louisiana officer Wandre Gilliam, who was 22 years old. Now, most police departments, if not all in this country, require you to be 21 years old before you can become an officer. So clearly, Officer Gilliam had not been on the force that long. He attempted to pull a vehicle over. A pursuit ensued. He was actually ejected from his squad car, which overturned during that pursuit. So it goes back to what I said at the beginning. Determine what's worth chasing and what's not. Unfortunately, this officer lost his life in the line of duty during a pursuit. So for anyone that thinks pursuits are easy, cool, fun, it looks great, all the blue lights, the sirens, it sounds great. It's the most stressful thing, the most dangerous thing that an officer can do in 3 minutes or less. It's not fun. It's not pretty. It's not easy. So, my prayers to Officer Gilliam, his family, Godspeed to you. I want to thank you for listening. I will see you same time next week. Thank you and good night.
To continue the conversation, get updates on the show, and to find out when you can see him on television, follow Vincent on Twitter at Vincent Hill Sr. That's Vincent Hill, S.R. This has been Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill on Radio Influence.
This week on Crush Performance, we follow up the Super Bowl with a look at concussions in sport. Are we doing enough to raise awareness and improve player safety and long-term health? Chris Nowinski, co-founder of the Concussion Legacy Foundation, joins us to talk about their ongoing research into CTE, and we'll look at some potentially game-changing technology as we talk with Dr. Samuel Broud about the new Visus 01 helmet. So join us for a serious look at athlete safety right here on Crush Performance.